Okay, good afternoon. So last time we finished up talking about bit fiddling, talking about arithmetic right shift. So there were two versions of right shift we talked about, which we said C chooses between them based on whether you pass a signed or unsigned value. And the arithmetic version, which is the new version we learned about, was for signed numbers and it copies the signed bit. We also talked about the components of our processor. We're starting to see how we take our hardware components and actually make a kind of functional hard processor. And to do that, we need to talk about how the basic building blocks that we'll be dealing with work. When we had registers, a register file, and memories. These are building blocks that we're not going to discuss how they work internally very much, and we're just going to assume they're provided for us. And all of these have the property that they're things for reading. They just act continuously. We continuously read values from memory or from registers. And for writing, they always act on the rising edge of a shared clock signal. And that's how our processor advances state. And we talked about combining these components to actually run instructions. And in all the designs we showed, we did one instruction per cycle. And we needed to make decisions sometimes. We need to decide, if this is an add instruction, I want to do one thing. If this is an op instruction, I want to do something else. And we have this extra piece of hardware we could place to do that, which we could build out of gates, but we're not going to discuss exactly how that's done, called muxes. So for example, on an op, we want to add one to the program counter and store that in the program counter again. On a jump, we want to take something from the instruction memory and store that. The mux lets us decide what input do we provide to the program counter to decide what instruction to run next. Okay, any questions on things we covered last time? Okay, so a brief correction from last time. So I said that the arithmetic right shift instruction with SRA. And apparently I was thinking of something that wasn't x86. This is not SRA in x86. But it is in some other architectures I might have more experience with. So it's actually SAR. Does that make any sense? Does that make any more sense than SRA? No. We're not going to ever have you know what the shift instructions are. If we need them on a test or something, we'll just tell you this is the instruction mnemonic. If it's not in Y86, we're generally not going to have you memorize the instruction, with maybe the exception of LEA. And based on the post quiz, most people didn't really get arithmetic right shift, so I'll talk a little more about that. So logical shift, when we move the bits over, we add zeros. An arithmetic shift, we copy the sign bit. So whatever bit's at the top, we copy it. So if we have a one there already, we copy it. If we had a zero, we'd add a zero back in. Just like it would be the same as a logical shift if the sign bit is already zero. It only matters when the sign bit's one that there's a difference. And this means that in C, that we get the approximate equivalencies for division and shifting, even for signed values, where there might be otherwise a problem with the sign bit. And this particular means that, yes, you can get -7 from shifting a value, because it's going to be an arithmetic shift that's going to be equivalent to this division. So any questions on this? Okay. So, a brief session of anonymous feedback, a lot about the quiz, which was less good than I wanted it to be. So one thing was about the question we ended with last week and the post-quiz question that was kind of similar to it. And there was a complaint that I didn't maybe give a good yes-no answer to this yes-no question from last week. So here's sort of a summary of everything from last week on the question we had about adding muxes. So we had NOP and add, we went to put them together, we went to make a processor, we showed that with like some other, like Knopf and Jump. Let's do it for Knopf and Add. Where do we need boxes? Do we need it before the register to read? And the answer is no, because we can read and ignore the result in a Knopf. So that's a yes, no answer to that. But there's this caveat that I would expect to see you design processors where you maybe think it's cleaner not to do that, but you don't need it. So the answer is no, you don't need it. For the PC input, yes, you need something to handle the instruction length. That's gonna look like a mux, even if you don't draw it that way. And we have the register value number and the value to write, and the answer is yes, you need a mux here on either one, but not necessarily both. But at least one of them needs a mux. And the instruction memory address didn't, because it's just always equal to the PC output. We always read from where the current instruction is, which the PC register tells us. And the question this week was very similar. It was just a different question on the post quiz. It's a different set of instructions. And it's the same sort of logic. What I hope you would do is say, what do these inputs need to be for each of these instructions, and is it different? And if it's different, probably we need a mux. And I did drop the confusing case where there was some alternative. The register number to write, you need a mux on that, or the register value input. One of them, you either need to not write to a register or write the value that is already there. The easiest thing is to not write to the register. And most people got most parts of this right, so I'm not too concerned compared to the arithmetic shift, which was most people didn't get right. Yeah. Okay, so going back to, the question is going back to arithmetic shift, how do you get negative 7? Yes, but so the question is, you're shifting in ones, you end up with a bunch of ones. So as an unsigned number, it's going to be something really huge. But we're treating it as signed, so it's not. Yes?
So for the shift question, are we just going to assume the double greater than is always arithmetic shift?
So in C, question is double greater than always arithmetic shift? It depends on the type of the value you're shifting. So in the question we gave you on the post quiz, we said it was assigned short. So you know it's a signed value, so it's arithmetic. If it's unsigned, there's no sign bit to copy, so it's going to be a logical shift. Okay. Any other questions on any of the things I just mentioned, either arithmetic shifts or adding these muxes? We'll go over some more examples of processor layouts today, since that's going to be the topic for a lot of this course. Okay. And another anonymous feedback on the quiz was that I had this question on timing, which clearly I did not get across. And some people were angry that, oh, that was in the reading for the next week. How dare you? And the reason I wrote this question was not to have you read ahead, but because you should have been able to figure this out from looking at the picture of the ADQ CPU and our descriptions of exactly when the register file and registers do their thing with the clock signal. That's what my intention was and how you'd answer this question. Evidently, people didn't do that. We will go over this concept a lot more. It is very important to know about the timing of processors for the second third of the course before we talk about something called pipelining. And so that's why I want to cover this topic multiple times. And going way back, this feedback is not presented in the order received. Some people don't like things like a competition scoreboard like we had on the BOM homework. And yes, I know this is kind of intimidating. And the reason I have it is I know it makes some of our students learn more. I know it's good for some students. I know it's not so great for some students. It's kind of a compromise. And I like it better than extra credit, because if I give a lot of extra credit, that's not actually optional for most people. Like, you're going to feel obliged to do it because of your grade. So I don't want to give a lot of extra credit as the obvious alternative to having something like a competition if you want to do optional more work. Because I want it to actually be optional. You know, if you're taking lots of classes, I don't want you to feel like, oh my god, I need to do this, or else I'm going to tank my grade in this class. But maybe there's better ways of making it feel optional. Yes?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't let us do it, then our grades will just tank.
What? Sorry.
If you don't offer extra credit, the option to have extra credit, then...
Yeah, so there's not going to be any more extra credit in this class, and it was very small amounts.
Yeah.
That was deliberate, and that's because if I gave you, like, you know, a homework's worth of extra credit, you would be obliged to do that for your grade, I think. You would feel that way. It would not be optional, it would not be extra. And I don't want to do that. Okay, and another piece of anonymous feedback on quizzes, which is you should drop any question which most students get wrong. This seems like, at the surface might seem like a good idea, but if you think about what happens if you cooperate with each other, it doesn't create some bad incentives. So I can't really do that. I understand the idea. And some anonymous feedback to check your slides more carefully, like there should be a 5 in this slide. Yes, I believe in doing that. And it is amazing how many times I can read slides and miss certain types of errors. Yes?
Is the textbook like supposed to be in color? Because today it pointed out something that it said like this is in blue, but the whole thing's black and white. So
the question is, is the textbook supposed to be in color? The textbook is usually two-tone.
Because it said like in blue.
So blue and black, yes. It's possible you have some sort of, this might be something that's wrong with the quote-unquote international edition. Might be printed in black and white instead of black, white, and blue. But as far as I know, mine has, black, white, and blue printing. I wouldn't say color because mostly doesn't have color, yeah.
Are the quiz questions like kind of indicative of what the test questions are going to be?
So the question is, are the quiz questions indicative of what the test questions will be like? Test questions will probably be a little bit simpler, than the post-quiz questions, but similar style of questions. They'll probably be more different than the pre-quiz questions, because for the pre-quiz questions, I like look at the textbook and make sure the answers are in the textbook, which is not something I'm going to do for the exam. Okay. Other questions about quizzes? Yeah.
Can I ask about the pre-quiz question 1?
Okay, which was?
It's like the, which one is 42?
Oh, we will talk about that tomorrow, or Thursday.
Okay.
When we talk about HCLRS. We'll definitely get to it. Remind me if I don't. Okay. So, homework. So there's a homework due tomorrow. Hopefully you've started it, because I wouldn't recommend fighting, bugs in pointer code at the last minute. Doesn't seem like a good idea. Could lead to some bad experiences. So also, we have a lab tomorrow and a follow-up homework. The homework has some bit fiddling problems. They're all in C, but you get restrictions on what operators you can use, which will be different for each problem. Just read the problems. So the lab has practice problems. The lab is just complete what you can in the lab time. There's some minimum, very low threshold of what you need to complete to get credit for the lab, and that's it. And some of the problems in the lab are very difficult, and we don't expect anyone to finish. The homework has different problems than the lab, and we expect you to complete all of them, and they're of more uniform difficulty. The homework is due next week before when lab would be. And yes, I am aware that's the day before the exam. We don't have any reading quizzes next week. We also don't have a lab next week, so I think you have, and we're doing review and lecture next week, so I think you have time to do this. And I do know that that's what the schedule says. So any questions about any of the homeworks? Yes. So there's a post quiz for this week. There's no pre or post quiz for next week because there's an exam.
And then it's just review.
And the lecture next week will be anything we don't get to on Thursday plus review.
Okay, the homework is still due.
The homework is still due before lab time, and lab time next week is just review for the exam if you want to go. Okay, so last time we went over several versions of processors for executing a subset of instructions, and we'll continue that and then move on to looking at the textbook's kind of systematic approach to doing this. So I'll start with a more complicated set of instructions than any of the ones I showed you. I showed you like add and jump and things like that. Here's a more complicated set, which is all the move to some register instructions. So the way I go about drawing out what this circuit looks like is I'd first take the components I need, and then I look at my first instruction and say, what do I need to do to implement that first instruction, RR move Q? And I'm only doing RR move Q right now, no conditional moves, just the simple instruction. So our first step when running this instruction is we need to read it from the instruction memory. Because in this case, we need the two register numbers in the instruction, even if that's the only one we were implementing. And we need to read from those two registers and also write to the B register. So we need to take the output of our instruction memory, find the parts which are those register numbers, and send them to the register file to indicate what register numbers we want to read and what register number we want to write. And the other thing this instruction does is it takes the value we read from RA and puts it into the destination. So we just wire that up. And that implements RR move Q. And in fact, I have this input into source B, which I didn't actually need. But I did anyways because, well, it's going to make things a little easier in the next step. Yes?
The source B and destination E
come from the same wire. Yes. Source B here and destination E are wired to the same thing.
Why?
So the question is, why are they coming from the same thing? Because they're both RB in this instruction is what we're getting them from. We actually don't use source B. We could not actually wire it. We could not just not wire this up. But we're going to need to wire it up for a later instruction. And so I just set it up that way for convenience, but I could have not connected that. Yeah?
What do the 2 and the 0 mean down and bottom?
So the question is, what is this 2 and 0? So this is, remember, our instruction encoding. So the first byte of the instruction has a 2 in the top 4 bits and a 0 in the bottom 4 bits. And this is just something which is true of all our move Q instructions. Yes?
What is dest E?
So what is dest E? So dest E is the register number signal that corresponds to this register value input to the register file. So it says, what register number are we writing with this particular input to the register file? Yes? So the question is, why E? So I'm just using the names from our textbook. So the E stands for execute, basically. But yeah, it's, for now, you can consider it just arbitrary. It's just a name our textbook chose. I'm using the same names as our textbook, just so you can look at the diagrams in the textbook and they'll be consistent. But source A, source B, dest E, probably not the names I would come up with if I were coming up with new names for this. Yes? Where? Here?
Yeah. Are your
They're in a different order. Okay. It's the same instructions. I just chose to do this instruction first because it's the simplest one in this slide, basically.
So it doesn't matter what
order? It doesn't matter, yeah, as long as we implement all of them. I guess also this order is in order by opcode, which looks neater on the slide. But it doesn't matter what order you do them in, you'll get the same processor when you finish. Okay, so once we have rrmoveq implemented, we want to add irmoveq. And the first thing you'll notice about irmoveq is that it writes something else to rb. So this is where we're deciding what gets written to rb. That's whatever's on this line when the rising edge of the clock happens, that's going to be sent into rb. So we need to have a different input there. We want it to be, instead, this B value is what we want to input, not the output of a register. That means we need to add a mux to choose between what we do for these two instructions. So we're going to add this mux. And for our move Q, we're going to select the output of the register file as what we send to write through the register. And for our move Q, we want to send in V. And V is part of the instruction, so it's something which is on this wire out of the instruction memory. Yeah?
Just for clarity, these are like three totally different instructions, but we're trying to build one piece of hardware system that can execute them all.
Yes. So the goal here is that we're building one processor that can execute all of these instructions.
Quickly.
I wouldn't say it's quick, but that can execute all the instructions, just like our normal processor can execute all the instructions in Y86, which is our ultimate goal. So to add this mux, we also add some hardware, which is going to look at this 2 here and say, oh, OK, there's a 2 in this part of the instruction. That means it's an rmoveq. That means I want to select the top input on this mux and send it through to the register file as the value to write. So now that we have a mux there, so we can actually send the V from the instruction, we need to add that to the mux input. So we take the V out of the instruction and send it through to this mux as another value we can write. And we need to modify this circuitry here so we can actually choose the correct input. So the mux, when we have a 3 in this part of the instruction, will actually choose to send through this middle signal all the way through rather than the top one. And that's all we need to add in order for this now to be able to execute rmoveq or irmoveq. Yes? So the mux is making a choice. So we have two things we want to do. Sometimes we want to take the value on this wire, which comes out of the register file, and send it back to the register file. Sometimes we want to take the value on this wire, which comes from the instruction memory, and send it to the register file. And the same input. The mux is letting us make that choice based on the opcode in the instruction. And finally, we have one more instruction on this list, which is mrmoveq. So this is going to read a value from memory and send that into the register file. So our last input on this mux needs to come from this data memory here. So we're going to wire the output of the data memory into this mux. And we also need to, of course, set the input to the data memory so it knows what address we want to read. And that happens to be the result of adding the immediate and the other register. So this should not be there, but should be that. Because we want to add RB to D, which is the same place as B, so it's the same wire which has the value, and send that as the address we read in the data memory. And when we read that address, it comes out on the same cycle, and that's what we're going to input into the register file. And we also need to do some additional work here, which is that this writes into into RA. That's the register we're writing into, not RB. Yes.
What is the D?
The D stands for displacement. It's just a constant in the instruction. This constant here in the instruction. So we want to write into RA. So in addition to wiring the data memory output into the register file, we also need to change what we specify as the destination register. We want to specify RA as the destination register, not RB. And since we want to make a choice about whether we send RA or RB to the register file, we're going to use a mux to make that choice. So we have this mux here where we send through RA. RA sometimes and RB other times. We send through RB when we're executing RMoveQ or IRMoveQ, and we send through RA when we're executing MRMoveQ, so we can write to RA. And you might say, it's really weird that you chose that the people who made the YAD6 encoding chose to put the registers in the wrong order. That seems pretty annoying. And they did that because they wanted the two memory accessing instructions to have the same calculation to make, which we'll see later. But because this is what the encoding does, we need to make that decision there, and we need to add that mux. We needed, in addition to having another input to our write mux, we needed to also add this mux in front of the destination register number. Sometimes we want RA, sometimes we want RB. So any questions about anything on this picture?
IRMove moves like a number into a register, right? Like
the question is, IRMove moves a number, a constant into a register, yes.
And so that constant, like let's just say I had IRMove 5 and then a register, that 5 would come from the memory? Or where would that,
so the question is, where does the 5, if where does the constant for IRMoveQ come from? So the, so the constant, so if IRMoveQ, if this is our constant V, it's on this wire.
Okay.
Which that is not actually very clear, but there. That's where V and D are. Okay, any other questions on what's happening in this picture? So in this listing of instructions, which is what we gave you, which is, appears in the textbook, where they have the encodings, we have RA is the destination of MRMoveQ, and RB is the destination of all these other things. That's just how it appears in the instruction encoding, so that's what we need to do. Like, it's not the most convenient thing to do. I needed to add a whole bunch of extra stuff to do it, but because the encoding says to do that, that's what I need to do. Yes.
Why is it that we want to put all these instructions into one hardware?
So why do we want one piece of hardware to do all these instructions? Well, it would be very inconvenient if every time you wanted to run an instruction, you need to get a new CPU to do it. If you want to build one processor that can execute our program, which happens to have all these instructions somewhere in it. Yes.
Could you kind of explain again what is going into the ALU with
So what's going into the ALU with MRMoveQ is the question. So here, The operation that MRMoveQ does is that the register with number RA gets memory at D plus what's in RB. So this addition here to compute the address to read from memory is what we're doing in the ALU. It's the only thing calculation we actually need to do for any of these instructions, so it's the only thing the ALU is wired to do.
So is D kind of like the same as V?
So D is exactly the same as V. They're on the same wire because they come from the exact same place. They're the exact same part of the output of the instruction memory. They have different names because that's just how we write them in the instruction encoding to emphasize that one is a value we use directly and the other is something we use as part of computing an address. Yes? Sure. So we have, I'll write up here. So the operation is RA gets memory at D plus RB. And this calculation is what happens here. Okay. Any other questions on this? So is there anything I'm missing in order to have something which can run all of these instructions with one piece of hardware? Yeah.
So you have to increment the program counter?
Yeah, we didn't deal with the program counter input. And it needs to. We need to know what instruction we run next. We don't just want to run this instruction and then have no idea what to do. So we need to also add something which increments the program counter. And there's two possible values we have to do that. We can add 2 for RRMoveQ or 10 for the other instructions because they're 10 bytes long. Okay, so we have, yeah.
What's the third input to the MUX from the convert operator?
Third input. So the third input here, this input?
No, from convert operator to the MUX, why wouldn't the 2 and plus 2 plus 10 be sufficient?
So we have those. What's the convert opcode input, you mean?
Yeah.
So this is how we have to make the decision, and that's going to be based on this 2, 3, or 5. And this is the circuit I've drawn, which looks at 2, 3, or 5 and decides what to send to that MUX. Yes?
Why is it plus 2 and plus 10?
So why is it plus 2 and plus 10? Someone want to answer this? Or back there?
The RRMoveQ instruction is 2 bytes, whereas the instructions are
10
bytes.
Yes, so it's about how long the instructions are. RRMoveQ, we have 2 bytes, 2 zeros, 1 byte. RA and RB is another byte. IRMoveQ is 10 bytes. 3 zeros, 1 byte. FRB is 1 byte. And then V is 8 bytes. So that adds up to 10. Yes?
Sorry if you're repeating here, but could you explain one more time what the next R destination E is?
So question is, what is next R destination E? So if you remember how our register file works, we input a register number to write and a value to write. And when there's a rising edge of the clock, it copies the value to write into a register. So next RDSD is that value to write. And I labeled it that because after the rising edge of the clock, it's going to be the new value of the register with number DSD. I'm using R brackets as if we have an array of register values in C. I'm going to use M brackets as if we have an array of bytes in memory when I represent memory, like up there. Okay, any other questions on this picture? Where we add a little more to it? So that's the move to register instruction. So let's add the one remaining move instruction we missed, which is move from a register to memory. So to do this, we're going to need to look, we can look at what we need to change here. So what are some things that we need to add in order to implement this additional instruction, RM move queue, move from register to memory, that don't appear in this picture? Where are there problems where we don't have something we need as an input to one of these components? So you can think about what do we need to put give to the data memory? What do we need to give to the register file? Is how I would go about doing this. Say, what should the input be when I'm executing this register to memory move instruction? Yeah. Yeah, so the one hole is that this instruction needs to write to the data memory, so we better have something on this input to the data memory about the value to write. We need to send some value there, and what value should that be? So this you can get by, let's look at what does this instruction do. What value does it take? So that's the address. But the input we're missing is not the address, but it's the value to write. So that would be source A. Our source A is the value we actually want to write. So we do have to worry about the other input, the address input, and we'll look at that in a second. So one thing we need to do is add the, is that we want to input the value to write. Which is source A. So then we also have to worry about the address. And the address we want to write to is D, the displacement, plus RB. And this happens because of how our instruction set was designed to be the same address that we're computing for MR move queue. So we don't actually need to add anything. And this is why MRMoveQueue writes to the wrong register in order to simplify the address computation. So it's kind of a trade-off. We added something before the register file in exchange for making the ALU operation require less special cases. So anything else that we need to deal with? So we have the input to the data memory. So any other inputs which are we have problems with? We should probably just go through them systematically. So we can say the sort register number we're reading, do we need to read RA for this for RM move queue? So people are shaking their head yes, because that's the value we actually want to send to the data memory. We better read it. And this needs to come from RA, just like all these other instructions that, well, RR move queue, which is the only other instruction which made us have that wire. Do we need to read from RB? Is it the same RB that all these other instructions read from? So, no. So we do need to read from RB, and the reason is because of this address computation. And it's the same, the two memory instructions are the only ones which actually need to read from RB. But for the other instructions, I just wired it up, and it didn't cause any bad things to happen. So we're reading from RB, that's right. How about the destination register? So do we need to write to either RA or RB? No. So we don't want to do that. And so the easiest solution is going to be to not write to either of them and to specify that special register number we talked about, meaning no register. So one thing we could do, and probably the simplest option, is we can add an input to this mux we already have to decide between RA and RB, and give another option, and that option is no the register number 15, which means don't write to a register. And if we've done that, it doesn't matter what we do here. It's true that none of these values that we can get on this wire are useful, but it's going to be ignored as long as we pass register number 15. So is there any other input we're missing here? Anything sort of case we want to handle that doesn't look like we can really handle right now? Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
What's the difference between wiring the source straight into data in, data out? Like, what is data in, data out as compared to where the ALU is?
So the question is, what's the difference between data in and address in and data out? So in our memory, so this memory does the operation. So it does one of two operations. So either it does data out equals memory at address in. So it can read memory. I guess I should use an arrow to make it clear what I'm doing here. It does that. Or it can write memory. So it can say memory at address in equals data in. So these are the two things our data memory can do. So the first one is continuous, and the second one is on the rising edge of the clock. Okay, that makes sense. Iffy. So the question, what type of values are they? So they're.
Is it just a value, or what is that?
It's a value that we can store in memory, and our processor is going to happen to be an 8-byte value. So this does bring up a question: how do we know which of these the data memory is doing? And if you remember when we talked about memories, we had some signals to enable read and write. And that's a missing component here. We don't want to always write, because our IR move Q and MR move Q shouldn't change values in memory. So we need to have something on this picture that handles that. So we need to have some sort of write enable signal that we send, which controls when we read or write. And that's going to be based on the opcode. So there's some other wire that comes from convert opcode that I'm not going to draw over everything. I'm just going to note it comes from there. Yes?
Is the 0xf not come from the split, or did you just not draw it?
So the question is, does the 0xf not come from the split? Yes, because it is not part of this RM move Q instruction.
But it'll see the 4 and then know that it shouldn't write?
It will see the 4 and then it will send the input on this wire to make this connection happen. Okay, any questions on this picture? I think this is everything we need to do all these instructions with one piece of hardware. Okay, so our textbook divides the instructions somewhat differently. It divides them off into stages, spends a lot of time talking about that. So I'm going to draw what the stages look like over. Here's a clean version of that picture. So I'm going to draw the stages our textbook talks about and what parts of this picture they correspond to. This may not be the most sensible way of dividing up this picture. There's a reason our textbook does what it does, and that will become clear in the second third of the course when we talk about pipelining. So the textbook's choice of what's in each stage is because it's going to make something we're going to do later more convenient. But any way of dividing up the work of this processor lets you think of only what happens in individual parts. And that's the main goal of it, that I can just worry about, hey, what's in the decode part? What do I need to do in that part, which is about what are the source register numbers? I can only worry about that. Or what's in the write back part, which is about what values do I send for the register numbers for writing the register value? I can just worry about that independently for each instruction rather than looking at this whole picture and trying to figure out what's wrong. I just say, look at one of these boxes and say, for this instruction, what should happen here? That's the goal of dividing it up into stages. So our textbook has these stages, so fetch. In fetch, we read the instruction memory, split up the instruction into its pieces that we're going to need, like register numbers, constant values, and also compute the length of the instruction in order to find the address of the following instruction in memory. In a stage called decode, we read the register file. You may say, that doesn't really sound like decoding the instruction, and you're right. It is not a great name. In the execute stage, we do actual arithmetic. We do whatever the ALU needs to do, and this includes address arithmetic. Because in our instruction set, we do some addition to compute any memory address we access. Well, almost any memory access, address we access. We also have a memory stage. This is where we deal with what are the inputs to our data memory and what does our data memory do? Does it read? Does it write? Where does the address come from? Does it come from the ALU? Does it come from something else? That's where we deal with all those questions. Then we have the write-back stage. This is where we deal with what do we actually write to the register file? What register number is it being told to write? Where does it get the value from? Is it from the ALU? Is it from the register file's outputs? Is it from the memory, et cetera? And we have a, yes?
Yeah, so data memory and registers are on the same system clock, right?
So the question is, yes. These are all on the same clock, right? Why do I call these stages? And yes, they are. So this is a conceptual division of the instruction. This is not what order things actually happen in. This is a division, so you can say, I want to know how to write make a move instruction. Let's figure out the decode for all these instructions, and all you worry about is what do they read from the register file. That's the usefulness of these stages at this point. We have our final stage, which is PC update, which is where we compute the next value of the PC. So if we have a jump instruction, this is where we decide to not take the following instruction, but actually do the jump and copy from the instruction memory into the PC. So any questions on what's in each of these stages that our textbook talks about? Okay, so on the issue of these being a conceptual division of the instructions, so here's, I have written the stages up there, the names that our textbook uses. So order when all these events happen for push queue. So I've listed some events. I want you to think, to answer this question about how registers, register files, and memories work. So come up with an answer and check with your neighbor that you think you have the same answer. Or when we read from the instruction, when we actually change memory for the push instruction, and when we actually change the RSP and the PC. Question? Got it. Okay. I'll give you about a minute. Okay, any, who has decided on some answer? Okay, so that's maybe a slight majority, which in the interest of time I'll consider enough. So whose best guess is that A is correct? How about B? C? Okay, a couple. D? E? F? Okay. So there's a bunch of people who think B and a bunch of people who think D and some minority who think some other answers. So does someone want to argue for either B or D? Yes.
I should be because in steps 2, 3, and 4, the states change, and as high school mentioned, that happens close together, as close to the end of the plot cycle as possible, because the states get updated.
Yeah, so one way you could know, so B is in fact the correct answer, and one way you could know this is because the textbook says this is when our states change. It's change altogether. Another way you could know this is when I talked about how registers work, I said at the rising edge of the clock, they actually copy the value. And the register file at the rising edge of the clock actually copies the value. And the question here says, when does the value change, not when is it computed? So the new value of RSP is going to be computed way earlier, probably. But it's not until the rising edge of the clock that we actually copy that value into the register that represents RSP. It's not until the rising edge of the clock that we copy the value we read from RAX into memory, even though it's ready much earlier. Yes? So the question is, when we write down push and pop, in order to keep ourselves sane, we usually say we either do the increment first and then access memory or not. So that clearly doesn't happen in hardware. That's not how our hardware works, but we're going to make our hardware do the same calculation. So in particular, this is going to change whether we pass the value, which is RSP plus something, to memory or not. So we make that decision based on which operation is supposed to appear to happen first. But in fact, they will both happen at the updates will happen at the same time. Okay, so this is an important concept, so we'll mention it again at some point probably. So yeah, it's these stages are about dividing up the work. They aren't about when things actually happen. And it would be, you know, reasonable to think, if you read about the stages with all the emphasis the textbook thinks on that, that, you know, it seems like that would be the order things actually happen. It's just going to be the order we design our processor in. It's not going to be the order the hardware actually does things in. Mainly because it's the rising edge of the clock that actually causes all our state changes to happen. Yes?
So the answer B is like a clock cycle for one to happen and a clock cycle for 2, 3, and 4 to happen.
So the question is, what's the timing with respect to clock cycles in B? So we have our clock cycle, and this is when 2, 3, and 4 happen at the end of the clock cycle. And sometime in the middle of the clock cycle, one happens. Yes?
Jeff, I know you've been saying this, but like, just to clarify, are you saying that like 2, 3, and 4, like for example, like all happen at the same exact time, or is it still like kind of like delayed?
So the question is, do the 3, 3, and 4 happen at the exact same time, or is there some delay? So there's a reason I use this sort of weaselly wordy almost the same time. So they're all triggered by this rising edge of the clock signal, but it's physical. Signals take time to go places. So it's not going to be like exactly in step. But there's all this one event which triggers all these things to happen, which is that rising edge of the clock signal.
Yeah, so since they're not like exactly at the same time, the particular order is still, like, does it matter?
So the order, the question is, will the particular order matter? So if we've, if the people who are responsible for actually building our components did their jobs correctly, it won't. If they didn't, you know, something might be broken. So we're going to build our, we're going to hope that our hardware works, that all that matters is that we send this rising edge of the clock, and then everything's going to work the way we expect.
Right, and then also, like, for the instruction read, that'll always take its own, clock cycle.
So the question is, the instruction read takes its own clock cycle, so it's not its own clock cycle. It happens, so this is our clock, this is one clock cycle here, because it goes rising edge to rising edge. It happens in the middle of the clock cycle.
So it doesn't, not the rising edge?
But it's not at the rising edge because we need to use the values we read from the instruction to prepare the things to write. So all our reads are going to happen in the middle of the clock cycle during this thing I have bracketed out as one. All our writes happen at the very end. This counts for reading memories. And reading the register file. Yes?
So what's actually happening in hardware? Because intuitively, I'm thinking that the device needs to know that the stack pointer has been changing from where to know where to write. So what's going on in hardware where it doesn't necessarily?
So the question is, push needs to, it seems like push needs to change the stack pointer before it knows where to write. So what we're not going to actually implement the instruction that way because that doesn't work with our processor design. So instead, we're going to compute the new value for the stack pointer, and we're going to send that value to the memory and to the register file. Precisely because the way our register file works, we can't write the value in the middle of the clock cycle. That's going to be how we're going to deal with that. Yeah, back there?
So does the one happen in the middle of the clock cycle because it's like triggered by two from the rest of the rising edge?
Yes. So the reason one happens in the middle of the clock cycle is that at the beginning of our clock cycle, the PC just changed. And that's going to make the instruction memory do something new because it gets a new input. So other questions? Up there.
So you said something that kind of like slightly confused me. You said all writes happen at the end of the clock cycle?
Yes.
I just thought everything happened at the rising edge.
So the rising edge will consider the end or beginning of the clock cycle. The rising edge is what separates clock cycles in my terminology. I will try to call it the end consistently. I'm sorry if I call it the beginning.
Okay.
But the end of the previous clock cycle is the rising edge. I'll try to use that terminology.
Yeah, be more explicitly clear about what the clock cycle is with respect to this drawing. Does it start just to the right of that first rising edge?
So usually we will say it just starts just to the right. When I write like test questions, I will, for this reason, usually write in the form of after X rising edges of the clock or something like that. I'll just say how many divisions do we have, rather than saying we're in one versus another. Yeah.
Okay, just like an example, if you're saying after like two rising edges of the clock, like where in that clock cycle?
So if we start right here, this would be after one rising edge of the clock. This would be after two, and right here is when we have our, you know, PC output is for the current instruction. So that's a falling edge, and that is not going to matter except that you need a falling edge before you can have a rising edge. So I'm going to draw falling edges, but nothing's going to happen on the falling edge. Okay, any Other questions about timing? So the key concept is state changes happen at the rising edge of the clock. Everything else happens throughout the clock cycle when we're executing an instruction. Okay. So our stages are this conceptual division, which our textbook thinks is helpful for figuring out what the instructions do. And they write down what the instructions do in this kind of format, where they have an entry for each stage of the instructions. I'm conspicuously mixing execute here. And they indicate sort of operations which happen in some notation that sort of shows what the where the values come from, where they go. I'm going to go over what this means as far as our hardware. So I have the stages that our text and the operations in each stage that our textbook writes down for NOP. So the first thing which happens in NOP in most instructions is we read from the around the program counter. This is reading the instruction. Our textbook uses this notation of M underscore 1 to indicate we read 1 byte from memory. In our physical hardware, we're always going to be reading 10 bytes, but this is just represents one of those 1 byte worth of the output of the instruction memory. So that's what that M1 of PC represents. And we say we assign that to two names, one called iCode, which is the top 4 bits of the opcode, the part which represents which instruction is it, and the iFun, which is for something like add or jump, the condition code or function, the sub-instruction part of the opcode. And you know, basically this is a named wire, is how you can think of it. These variables are just wires which have a value while the instruction is executed. And the assignment operator means we just connect the wire so there's a value on the wire which comes from, in this case, the instruction memory. We have some other things which look like putting values in a wire but are special. So one case is this PC gets val p. And what this represents is not so much storing a value in the PC but putting a value on the input to the PC register. This says we connect a wire we called val p earlier to the PC register. And if we look, that wire we called val p is connected to the result of adding 1 to the output of the PC register. So this is representing that +1 circuit that wraps around to the PC we saw earlier. Any questions on any of the operations for NOP here and how they correspond to our pictures? Yes. So this, what is this first line means we have our instruction memory. We get part of the output, and we split it off into something we call iCode and iFun. That's what it's representing. So the thing that this represents, this is 1 byte at the address PC, which happens to be the opcode and that 8 bits. Yes.
What's the iCode and iFun in this case?
So what's the iCode and iFun for NOP? The iCode is going to always be equal to 1 and iFun is always equal to 0, just because of what NOP is. You could know this by looking at the table of instruction encodings in our textbook.
And iFun, is that very useful?
So the iFun is what we're going to use to distinguish between add, subtract, and XOR, or to distinguish between jump, jump less than, jump greater than, and so on. So we also have this for other instructions. So here, for example, is the same sort of listing, but for the jump instruction. We have another thing representing a different value coming out of the instruction memory, which is what they, our textbook calls val C, which is the address we jump to. And you can see that for these two instructions, we do different things that are, look like they're conflicting in the PC update stage. And you can think of this as being a representation that for NOP, we're going to take val P and send it to the PC. And for jump, we're going to take val C and send it to the PC. So whenever you look at these instruction listings and see a conflicting operation, that means you add a mux, and that mux is based on the opcode. And this is where we have some advantage to dividing things into stages, because we just look at each stage and see, are there conflicts here? If so, where I know what muxes I need. So, any questions about these versions? So this corresponds exactly to a picture I showed you on Thursday. And we can just relabel that picture with the names our textbooks like uses for these different components. So they just have different names for some of the wires. I don't think their names are particularly great choices, but I'm going to use them so you can refer to the textbook and understand maybe what's going on. And you notice that our textbook just doesn't list this extra logic we needed to control the mux. They're just not going to show it. And that's just their convention, is that they're not showing that logic, it's just implied. Not writing anything down that corresponds to it. So there's some other things if you're reading the stages listings in our textbooks. I'm going to show, here are some much more complicated ones, because the memory move instructions do a lot more work. They access memory, they do an addition to compute an address. They're a lot more complicated. And they have some things we haven't seen before. So we have this thing which looks like an assignment from an array R. The array R represents our register file values. So that means read from the register with number RA. So this operation means that we're both setting the register read inputs and we're naming the output of the register file. So val A is the name of that output wire, and we're also setting the source A input to RA, is what this line in this listing of what this instruction does says. And you note that there's no corresponding line here, but that doesn't mean, so we just don't, this just doesn't say what to do to the source A input, but there's no conflict if we also read the register. We also have assignments to memory. So they use this notation of an array M with an underscore indicating how many bytes you're accessing from it. But this just means accessing memory. And the way we do that in the memory stage is by using our data memory. So this says set the address wires of the data memory to be connected to the wire I've called val E, set the value input to be connected to the wire I called val A, and set the write enable input to 1 because we're writing. And this means to set the address input to val E and give a name val M to the output of wire from the data memory. And we also have writing to a register. That just means set the register file input to something, and also not write enable, the write number. Why did I to RA? Instead of register write number, dest in this case to RA. That's what that says to do. So you can work through, so this should tell you, you know, you can work through these stages systematically and figure out what wiring does this mean I need to do, and you could hypothetically draw the wiring for these circuits. We're not actually going to do that, we're going to have you use something that's text-based rather than having pictures with lots of crossing wires that are impossible to read. But I showed you them in lecture because I think that's the easiest way to understand sort of what we're doing when we construct these processors. But you can go from these descriptions of what happens in each stage to figuring out what wiring does that mean we add between these basic components, the registers and the register files and the memories. And so we can take our old picture and also relabel all the wires with the names our textbook descriptions use. And I note that we have a bunch of wires that are on this picture that just never appear in the stages. So they just say you magically figure out, according to those descriptions, what to do for each instruction. In fact, we're going to have some wiring which controls Muxus to do it, which I've drawn explicitly on this picture. So this is commonly called a control path, because it controls what operations we do. And the thing that's not a control path are called the data path. That's where the actual data is. So our description of what the instructions do, you can think of as the data path that says where do values go in the processor, and not described that you have to figure out is the control path, which is how do I decide which of multiple options I send data through? What's the circuitry that does that? There's a fuzzy line here, like for example, are condition codes part of the controller data path? You might get conflicting answers. So we're not going to ask which is which, but generally we're going to omit parts of the control path when we talk about our processor because you're going to figure that out based on the I-code, and we're not going to draw the wires that you'd send to do that. Any questions about data path, control path, or circuit diagrams? So I'll start, and we'll finish it up next time, going through each of the stages a bit more systematically and telling you what the textbook's names are. So we have our instruction fetch phase. So we split our instruction memory output into separate wires. The textbook uses the name iCode and iFun for the two parts of the opcode, the main part and the is it a conditional, what type of conditional jump or what type of arithmetic instruction is it? We have RA and RB for register numbers, which always happen to be in the same place. And we also have VALC for either the target of a call or the displacement of a memory move. And we compute this extra wire called VALP, which is the instruction address. So this is sort of the part of our processor when we've just done the instruction fetch phase. This is what it looks like. So then we have instruction decode, where we read our registers, whatever registers we care about for the instruction, into val A and val B. So most simply, it would look like that, but this doesn't work for all instructions. So as a last exercise, so what instructions does this not quite work for? So we want to get our val A and val B. So this is val A, val B. What instructions are we not reading the right things from the register file if we wire it up this way, if we always read RA and RB? So any volunteers or no? Okay, so talk about this. So for add, this is fine. We want to read to those two registers for mRemove Q. There's no problem. For pop, we need to read RSP. And for call, we need to read RSP. And those aren't part of the instruction. So we're going to need to add a bit of something to handle that. So next time, we'll talk about what we add and go through the remaining stages.